Hey fam, it is Phoenix. Welcome to the wine cellar. We are here, we are doing stuff, we are doing things. Mostly, we're doing news. Yeah, that's what we're doing, news. we're doing a Sunday special episode, if you will. Not that Sunday itself is special, but we haven't been podcasting too much this week, and I just really wanted to throw up some content because we appreciate people who follow us, support us. We appreciate people on the Patreon, patreon.com/winecellarmediafund. And it's not fair to not be putting up content. This week has been a bit chaotic. If you follow us, or particularly if you follow William on Facebook, you know that he's been working a lot this week. I think he hit about 75 hours. Which basically means working double shifts just about every day, and then also working on the weekends. So it's, you know, 7 straight days this week, and then, of course, won't have any time off until Thanksgiving next Thursday. So it's a little bit stressful, a little bit chaotic, and it makes it really, really hard to podcast, right? You know, it's just incredibly difficult to, you know, be on your feet moving around working, doing a 12-hour day, and then come home and do show prep and set up and do a podcast. So that's what's going on there. Hopefully that will be a little less stressful next week, and following that, we'll see what happens. There might be a promotion in the works, but in the meantime, y'all here with me. Thank you. I've got news. I've got comment. I've got stuff. I've got things. Basically, typical wine cellar stuff, right? So I have a show opener coming up. It's going to have the trigger warning, as we always do. And then, of course, a couple stories involving sex workers' rights. Hashtag good cops, because I love good cop stories. Some stuff about Texas universities, California school books. And then I just wanted to riff a little bit towards the end about Cardi B. We have critiqued Cardi B's songs on the podcast before, so you know we're not a fan of her bars, if you could call them that. However, she is now being lauded as a feminist icon, and I saw this article on Jezebel, who, I know, like, fucking Jezebel, they're kind of known for bad takes at this point, so I'm not shocked, but I wanted to talk about it anyway. I don't see Cardi B as a particularly feminist icon, so yeah, I just wanted to maybe push back on that idea a little bit. You know, if I hurt your feelings with it, at me on Twitter, we'll hash it out, or I'll just make fun of you. I don't fucking know yet. We'll see what happens. So let us get to the show opener, let us get to the trigger warning, and then we can get to the actual news and comment. Let's do it.
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
All right, y'all. Man, you know the hard thing is, you know, when you take some time off of podcasting, right? Like, you have a hectic week. You feel like you can't fucking catch up. Like, there is so much news going on that it feels almost impossible to get back up on top of things. Like, it is overwhelming. We have, like, a secret group, right, on Facebook where we just put stories that we want to cover. My news dump thread has, like, 30 different news articles in it. Like, it's ridiculous at this point. It's reached a certain level of absurdity, quite frankly. It's just absurd. So, let me see what we can get through today. And then, of course, tomorrow I will be back with more. Because there's always news. Because people are always doing things. Could you imagine how chill the world would be if everyone just sat the fuck down for like a week and didn't do shit? Like if everyone could just take a week off of work, not do anything, just stay home and chill the fuck out. What a time to be alive that would be. All right. So, what do I have here? I guess we can start with the easy stuff first. In Texas, Texas State University suspends Greek life activity after frat pledge dies. Now, if you are a regular listener of the Wine Cellar, you might be thinking, Phoenix, didn't you just cover that shit like 2 weeks ago? Good question. The answer is no. No, I did not. It's that this happens to be the exact same type of story, but a different campus. The one we did last week was, a couple weeks ago was Florida State University. And then if you have a really good memory and you've been listening for a while, you're like, but didn't you cover that like 2 months ago? No, that was another university. I believe it was North Carolina. So now in Texas, the suspected alcohol-related death of a fraternity pledge has led Texas State University to join a growing list of colleges to suspend all Greek life activities. Officers responded to an off-campus home around 11:30 a.m. Monday and found sophomore Phi Kappa Psi pledge Matthew Ellis, age 20, unresponsive. He was declared dead approximately an hour later. Ellis of Humble, Texas, had attended a social event Sunday hosted by members of a university fraternity, according to the Texas State President Denise Trouth. It's unclear if the event was hosted by members of one fraternity or members of multiple fraternities. Well, I mean, I guess it kind of doesn't matter, right? Because if there are people from multiple fraternities there who just let this shit slide, then that's kind of on everybody, right? So an autopsy has been ordered, but the words elude me sometimes. The preliminary investigation suggested alcohol was a factor. Alcohol is a factor in every fucking death that involves Greek life. Whether that was somebody was, you know, died of alcohol poisoning or was too drunk. I think the last one was someone who was so drunk they fell over and cracked their head open. Like, it's always a factor. As a result of this tragedy, I have suspended activities of all Greek fraternity and sorority chapters at Texas State. These chapters are prohibited from holding new member events, chapter meetings, social functions, philanthropic activities, until a thorough review of the Greek affairs system is completed. Oh, but don't worry. Our thoughts and prayers are with the entire student body during this difficult time. That has become the most useless phrase of all fucking time. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. Okay. I mean, all right. And then, of course, they mentioned the Florida State one. Andrew Coffey, a civil engineering major from Pompano Beach, Florida, was pledging, died earlier after being found unresponsive following a party. In September, Louisiana State student Maxwell Groover, who was in the process of being initiated to fight Delta Theta fraternity, died in Baton Rouge with a blood alcohol of 0.495. 0.495, just for a reference point, typically you get a DUI if you're going above a 0.06. So, yeah. University of Michigan also suspended Greek Life after allegations of sexual misconduct, hazing, and drug use. And other charges have been filed against 17 former Penn State University fraternity members after the alcohol-related death of 19-year-old Timothy Piazza. I believe that was the one where he got so drunk that he, fell over and cracked his head open and, fell on a flight of stairs and shit, and they just left him there until he died because they didn't want to call police because they knew they were going to get in trouble. Which is, that's fucked up, right? So you're going to let somebody be injured, see them injured, and leave them there so you don't get in trouble, even though you know that they might be dying. And as if that wasn't, cold-hearted or malicious enough, these are the people who are going to be running the country in a couple years. These people have fucking business majors, and they're going to be lawyers, and they're going to work at banks. Do you really want the guy who, let his fraternity brother die an alcohol-related death so he wouldn't get in trouble? Do you want that guy to be the judge someday for you if you get, a misdemeanor charge for some bullshit? Is that the guy you want to determine whether or not you get a loan to buy a house? Is that the guy you want to have a criminal justice degree and he can pull you over and has a gun and he's a cop? That's why shit's fucked up, man. So, yeah. I don't know. I never got into the whole fraternity sorority thing. It never seemed like a good idea. Still doesn't seem like a good idea. I don't know why people are so invested in this shit, to be honest. But here we are. So, my sinuses are fucking wild. So that is what is going on there. Let me see. What else do we have? I guess I will go through the sad shit first and try to bring it back around to more fun things, right? So, if you are a listener, you've been a listener for a while, we try to address sex workers' rights. It's an important topic to us because we, want to give platforms to marginalized stories stories of marginalized people whenever possible. Mm-hmm. And it just seems really, really difficult at times because there's, a really significant push to, not talk about sex worker rights, not talk about trans rights, not talk about LGBTQIA issues, not talk about misogynoir because we aren't the respectable people in society, And so oppression against certain groups just seems to be more tolerated and, that's fucked up. We don't like it. That's not how we roll in the wine cellar. We want to socialize the justice for everyone. So, Victoria Head is a sex worker who was murdered. This has been an ongoing story. I've kind of been watching. This whole fucking thing is just, it's fucked up. It's really fucked up. So this is coming from the Telegram. Excuse me for a moment. My sinuses are just Whew, oh my goodness. Thank the Lord for pause buttons. I just had the most wicked fucking sneezing fit of my life. Whew. All right. Okay, so we were talking about Victoria Head, a sex worker who was murdered in Canada. There's a quote from Heather Jarvis, who says, "Stop the stigma around sex workers. It's time that the public recognizes that sex workers are people too, who deserve to live safely in our communities. We have to stop making sex work a problem here and start recognizing the wider problem is violence against women," says Jarvis, a program coordinator at the Safe Harbor Outreach Project, aka SHOP, which is an organization that advocates for sex workers' human rights. "We expect that the fault and the blame to be put where it belongs, on the people who target and violate the safety and the rights of women across our province." Jarvis spoke to the Telegram Wednesday, 4 days after the murder of Victoria Head. The 36-year-old's body was found by a member of the public near O'Brien Farm on Oxen Pond Road. Police believe that Head may have been involved in the sex trade industry. See, they're saying that as a precautionary. Oh, the sex workers already knew and talked about this. She was a sex worker. which investigators say could be connected to her murder. While Jarvis won't speak about Head specifically, she certainly says that Head did not deserve to die. She did nothing to bring this on herself. We are at a loss for words. We're incredibly sad to hear another incredible woman has been murdered and lost in our province. Many people are grieving. We know that she was loved by many. Our thoughts and condolences go out to her family and friends. She says of the 200 women Shop has connected with, many face similar challenges. We know that stigma is one of the biggest impacts of people who engaged, people who were engaged in sex work face. Sadly, one of the things that we know all too well is that stigma does kill. Oh, this is fucking, this is tragic all around. Now is the time to be kind to each other, says Jarvis. Because stigma is so strong around people who engage in sex work, they can't tell people in their lives where they go or what they do to make income. They're often isolated, live in fear, and worried about consequences. For example, what if their landlord finds out? What kind of reaction will their doctor have? Do they even have access to healthcare? Are they being targeted by law enforcement? Oh, geez. So Victoria Head is the third woman to have been murdered in the province in 6 months. Also murdered were Courtney Lake, age 24, and Rihanna Grywacheski, age 18. Jarvis said many women live at the intersections of poverty and mental health, grappling with untreated addictions, homelessness, and racism. Of the 217,000 living in that particular province, approximately 100,000, basically one in two, will experience at least one incident of physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. Only 10% of these women will report victimizations to police. Yeah, that sounds about right, actually. Yeah. In a news release issued Wednesday, Jenny Wright, executive order of the St. John's Status of Women's Council, said violence against women and girls in our province is at a crisis level. We need the political will at all levels of government now to come to the table and address what is clearly a human rights issue. Oh, wow. And see, the thing with that, too, that, you know, lawmakers, but, well, we want to, you know, put in laws that are anti-sex worker, or anti-sex work industry, or anti-clients, because we want to protect women. Like, that's been, sex work has been criminalized for hundreds of years, and sex workers are still dying. So obviously, criminalizing and penalizing has not been the solution. You know, and something that astounds me, well, not astounds me, but continues to frustrate me, is if you go back and look historically, you know, sex workers being murdered now, like this, you know, Victoria Head woman is being stigmatized post-mortem because she was affiliated with the sex work trade. And meanwhile, that's exactly how, you know, murdered sex workers were treated in the 1970s and the 1920s and the 1800s. You know, if you were to go back and look at like Jack the Ripper, you know, and the comments that were made about the Ripper victims about, you know, they brought it on themselves by living this impure life, or, you know, someone who's engaged in that type of lifestyle should, you know the risks and know that, you know, being murdered is a possible consequence for their behavior, and just the general victim shaming, the class shaming, all those things. If you were to go back from, I think Jack the Ripper was like the 1880s. So like right after the Civil War, just for context. Basically, you know, the women who were treated that way then, people say the exact same things now, like almost verbatim, with slightly more, modernized language and slang. But it's astounding to me that, you know, the problem isn't that women are being murdered. The problem is that sex work exists, right? The problem isn't that people know they can take advantage of sex workers. The problem is that sex workers exist. You know, the problem isn't that sex workers are oppressed or face stigma. The problem is that sex workers exist, you know. Let's get your fucking priorities, right? Let's see. So in a news conference Wednesday afternoon to update reporters, Constable Jeff Higdon said it was important to disclose the fact that Victoria Head was involved with the sex trade and warned others in the same line of work to be extra vigilant. Well, thank you, officer. Thank you. So, yeah, we know people are targeting you because you're a sex worker. Just be extra vigilant. You gonna be all right. How nice. First and foremost, he says, Victoria Head is a member of our community. She was a mother, a daughter, a friend. However, knowing more information about the type of work she may have been in might be connected with her murder. I think it's important to get that out to the public. Okay. Later in the day, Higdon elaborated, pointing out that they don't separate sex workers from the general public, but noting that public safety is paramount. Which is so fucking disingenuous, right? The public means not sex workers. Like, let's just be honest. When we say the public, we mean the good people. We mean the law-abiding citizens. We mean the non-marginalized groups. When you talk about public safety, you're not talking about murdered sex workers because you don't consider them part of the public. Because if murdered sex workers were a problem, you wouldn't be using the same outdated stigma, slut-shaming, woman-shaming, class-shaming, racist-ass rhetoric that y'all have been using since the 1800s. If sex workers were actually part of the public. Like, don't fucking lie about it. Since this is still an active investigation, Higdon said he couldn't give details about how Head died, but said she was last seen in the early hour Saturday in the area of Queens Road. He said people there should be extra cautious. He said there are no suspects yet, but investigators are continuing to gather evidence and conduct interviews. Okay. It is a top priority for them. And it's probably not. But I did want to let people know that yet another sex worker has been murdered, and instead of reforming public policy around sex workers, there is still the stigma and the general bullshit, you know? And I think that the most telling thing is that it doesn't matter how many women die, and typically sex workers are women. Typically sex workers who are murdered are women who are lower income, oftentimes not white, not necessarily cis. Not necessarily hetero, may have struggles with addiction or mental health issues. It's, you know, I know we keep going back over the same talking points, but it's like people don't get it. And to introduce things like this fucking Swedish model, which is trash, or just saying, you know, sex work is a crime, and if you're arrested, you go to prison. These are not actual solutions that work. Like, I have never met people who have been so happy to be wrong. It's wild to me. So, rest in power, Victoria. If I find any other updates about this case, I will definitely address them. But yet another sex worker has been murdered, and the world does not care. So, good times. Good times. Let's see. This one is just as depressing, but this is the last super depressing one, I promise. We're going to make it through. Just we can do it. We can do it, y'all. Toledo, Ohio, a third pastor has been indicted on sex trafficking charges, and prosecutors have said all three men were working together to entice underage girls with money in exchange for sex. A federal grand jury has indicted Reverend Cordell Jenkins, Reverend Anthony Haynes, and Reverend Kenneth Butler on conspiracy to sex traffic children. All three men have pled not guilty. The U.S. Attorney's Office says Haynes began grooming a 14-year-old for prostitution in 2014. He says that he introduced her to other men and all three of the pastors had sexually assaulted her. Jenkins and Haynes were previously indicted on sex trafficking charges in July. An attorney representing them says he understands her client is facing very serious allegations. I cannot imagine being a woman defending men accused of grooming children for sex trafficking. But, you know, the story behind the story, these are pastors. These are, you know what? These are the people that we tell our kids to go to. We tell our kids to trust. They're a pastor. You can trust them. If you have a problem, you can trust them. And they're out here trying to sexually traffic children. This is like the fucking Celeste Guap shit where cops were, sexually exploiting and trafficking a minor. And, you know, it's, oh no, cops are the people you can trust. And who does it seem who's always fucking getting arrested for abusing kids in some way? What, cops, preachers, pastors, you know, religious leaders, counselors, and teachers. The people we tell our kids to trust the most are the ones that hurt them the most, because all we're really doing is giving predators access to victims on a constant basis. Because we have this, like, societal trust shit, right? Like, we should just inherently fucking trust them. They're not deserving of our trust. just because they're a pastor or a cop or whatever, you know? And then the victims get blamed because why the fuck not? So, I mean, I would say just don't go to church, but I know people are going to do it anyway. So if you must go to church, really get to know your pastor, your preacher, your religious leader. Don't let your children fall victim to this shit. All right. So that is what is going on there. I know it's always like that unhappy shit, but you gotta talk about it, right? Because you can't just pretend that these things aren't happening or pretend that it can never happen to you or pretend, you know, the shit is serious and it can happen. You know, you got to be aware. You got to be informed. You got to do it. Whew. All right. Now, what else do we have here? That's entirely possible. I don't think that we give a lot of fucks around here. Which is why we cover stories like this. Because they're fucking funny. Detroit. Hey, Detroit. An internal investigation has been launched at the Detroit Police Department after two different precincts got into a turf war as they converged on an east side neighborhood. I just want to point out that as much shit as people talk about Fox News, you know, and call it fake news, that's typically the, like, the main website, right? Like, I guess, I don't know, probably Fox.com. It's, you know, the main channel where they have on all their fucking pundits who are always doing, like, racist, homophobic shit. But if you go to, like, the local, you know, Fox News outlets, like, this is the Detroit local one, WJBK, they actually say police from two different precincts got into a turf war, which is pretty fucking honest. Because let's be real, police are a gang. They're a fucking gang. They have matching uniforms. They have badges. They have codes of conduct. They have their own slang. They're a fucking gang. And they got into a turf war in Detroit. Which is also interesting because most cops are white. So white people got into a turf war in Detroit. All right, let's see what happened. Neighbors who live on Andover in Detroit's east side will be the first to tell you this area is known for constant drug activity. There's definitely a drug problem in our neighborhood for years, but I don't think anyone can stop it, says a resident. Really? You're just gonna fucking freeze up on me? Thanks, phone. On Thursday, Detroit police tried, but maybe too hard. Honestly, who wrote this? They have a sense of humor. Taryn Asher. I clicked the person's name and I was hoping it was going to show me a picture, but it's just a link to email them. So according to Taryn Asher, Thursday, Detroit police certainly tried, but maybe too hard, to fight the drug problems. Sources say it started when two special ops officers from the 12th precinct were operating a push-off in Andover near 7 Mile. Is that like, oh wait, no, that was 8 Mile in the Eminem movie, right? They just name shit after miles though, that's a thing? All right. So, two special ops officers from the 12th precinct were operating on near 7 Mile, and that's when two undercover officers pretending to be dope dealers waited for eager customers to approach, then arrested the potential buyers and seized their vehicles. But by this time, instead of customers, special ops officers from the 11th precinct showed up. Wait, hold on. Okay. I just want to make sure I'm reading this right. So the 12th precinct showed up, and then undercover officers from another precinct showed up to arrest them. But at that time, officers from a third precinct, the 11th precinct, showed up. Not realizing they were fellow officers, they ordered the undercover officers to the ground. Fox 2 was told this is when the rest of the special ops from the 12th precinct showed up, and officers began raiding a house in the 1900 block of Andover. But instead of fighting crime, officers from both precincts began fighting with each other. Oh my god. Why is there not a fucking YouTube video of this shit yet? I want to see this shit. Sources say guns were drawn, punches were thrown, and homeowners stood by and watched. So just one more time. Officers from the 12th precinct were operating a sting. Undercover officers from another precinct were pretending to be drug dealers while undercover. They went to arrest the officers from the 12th precinct, but then the 11th precinct showed up, and then the rest of the 12th precinct showed up, and they all pulled guns on each other. And you know how I know this was a bunch of white niggas doing this shit? Nobody fucking died. Officers from three different precincts who didn't know each other, all pulling guns on each other and punching each other, and nobody fucking died. White privilege. Instead of fighting crime, they began to fight each other. Guns were drawn, punches were thrown, homeowners stood by and watched. The department's top cops were notified along with internal affairs. Each officer involved is now under investigation as the department tries to determine what went wrong. You gotta have more communication, I guess. I don't understand what happened with that not communicating, says a resident. Yeah, I guess you gotta have more communication. Fox 2 was told that one of the units had body camera video that detailed the entire incident. Someone leak it, please. That is now part of the internal investigation, and we are working to get our hands on it. We're told top brass doesn't plan to comment on this until next week. That's a fun story. I like that story. I mean, I wish there would have been more, like, you know, violence, but, you know. Yeah.
This show is so reverse racist.
So that's what they're doing in Detroit. I guess the moral of the story is stay away from cops. Don't trust cops in Detroit. Actual, like, legitimate good news. When California second graders learn about their families, they will learn they come in different shapes. Some are formed through adoption, some include one parent, others only grandparents. And from now on, textbooks will also teach that some families have two moms or two dads. California is set to become the first state to use LGBT inclusive textbooks in elementary schools for kindergarten through eighth grade classrooms. The great thing about these books is that they serve our students well, says Tom Adams, Deputy Superintendent for the Teaching and Learning Support Branch of the California Department of Education. We know many students out there are LGBT, or their parents, family, or friends are. This is a reality that most of our students have in their schools, and our instructional materials should reflect that reality. In fourth grade, textbooks will teach a notorious bandit battling California stagecoach driver named Charlie Packhurst was born a woman but lived as a man. Polly Paganheart. Her name is Polly Paganheart? Fine. Okay. Polly Paganheart says that's important. It's occasions for a conversation for kids about why a person would live their life as a man. She works for Our Family Coalition, one of the several organizations that worked towards the inclusive textbooks. What does that tell us about gender roles or the possibility for women to live full lives in the Wild West? Paganheart says the new textbooks will change how students learn about the history of social movements, too. The LGBTQ movement won't be omitted, as it often has been in the past, and said there's a lot of changes to constitutional law that have happened as a result of LGBT civil rights movement's work. Advocates expect there will be some lively debate at a school district level, but Paganheart says it's really important for people to bear in mind that telling students about what is true is different than advocacy. Truth in textbooks. So not, the Africans came over here as a willing workforce and the natives voluntarily left their land so white people could have them? Truth in textbooks. I'm here for it. School districts do not have to use these particular textbooks, but if they don't, they still have to use materials that include LGBT people's role in states in U.S. history because California law requires it. The adoption of these textbooks is the latest step of the implementation of California's Fair Education Act, introduced by former State Senator Mark Leno, who's now running for mayor of San Francisco. Under the law, social sciences curriculum in California and the United States must include contributions of LGBT Americans, people with disabilities, and members of other cultural groups. I think it's going to be a beautiful thing to see how this plays out in classrooms, says Pagan Hart. Her children grew up with two moms, and they felt before they got to third grade the sting of ignorance on the part of their peers. Her kids have also come out as gay, and says the school offered few role models, or if they've learned about them, like Sally Ride, they wouldn't have known that not only was Sally Ride the first woman in space, she was the first gay person in space. These sort of things make a difference. Now I kind of want to go and see, like, what some of the right-wingers are saying about this. Like, I know we do a lot of, like, clips from Alex Jones and Brian Fisher, you know? Brian Fisher is the 300 Spartans were 150 pairs of hyper-masculine homosexuals. And Hitler recruited the brown shirts who were all hyper-masculine homosexuals because hetero men refused to be as violent as the gay Nazis. Fucking. Brian Fisher thinks about dicks a lot. It's kind of weird, honestly. But yeah, I kind of want to, like, go check through his shit now and see what he's saying about this. He has to be having a fucking fit about this. Yes. No, come back. My phone is just tripping, y'all. I need a new one. So the newly approved textbooks also include information on the farm labor movement, the role Filipinos played in it, information about the Mexican repatriation program, which illegally... Jesus fucking Christ! This is something that I say about Alex Jones, is that he is exhausting because he lies about the truth, you know? So I'm just going to say this sentence as it is. It includes information about the Mexican repatriation program, which illegally deported thousands of Mexican Americans in the 1930s, many of whom were U.S. citizens. Does it count as repatriation when you are expelling people who have a right? You're not being re... No. You were illegally removed. That's not repatriating, but fine. And offers more details on African-American history, specifically the institution of slavery, and more on the situation of Native Americans in California's missions. Yes. When the board approved the 10 textbooks last week, it also rejected two books that didn't include LGBTQ history, violating the Fair Education Act. I think this is fantastic news, and I'm here for it. Not just because right-wingers are going to get mad, and it's going to be really funny, and I'm going to laugh at them, but also because these things are important. You know, there's all this, like, assumption that gay rights is about, it's about gay marriage, right? As long as we have gay marriage, we're fine, right? Or as long as, you know, we have, Black History Month, like, racism is basically over, like, you know. Or if we can just, you know, stop using the Redskins as a team mascot, like, Native people are totally cool. You know, it doesn't address the actual histories and systems involved. So I think this is a step in the right direction, honestly. Like, snark aside, you know, I can't imagine how, you know, Brian Fisher's or Alex Jones or any of those, you know, homophobic politicians are going to be about it. But I do think this is, like, legit a good idea. I just want to make sure that they're not whitewashing things. Like, you know, Stonewall was about trans women, you know, that sort of thing. Like, let's make sure that lesson is still in there. But yeah, I'm here for this. I really am. All right, what else do I have here? I have... Oh, and I think I said I was going to mention net neutrality. I might have said that in an earlier take. I was having some audio issues earlier, so I had to start over like 5 times. It's fun. It's a labor of love to podcast. Really, it is. But no, I did want to just mention net neutrality, and I know everyone, like, rolls their eyes and no one cares because it's, like, boring policy shit, but this will end up impacting you online, so let's just do it. Let's be adults and let's talk about net neutrality. So, net neutrality is on its deathbed, and Ajit Pai, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, aka the FCC, who was appointed by President Trump, is about to pull the plug. PI could release a new set of rules as early as next week, according to two sources familiar with the agency's process, while many Americans are distracted by Thanksgiving. If enacted, his proposals would likely rescind net neutrality rules passed by the FCC in 2015 that prevented internet providers like Comcast and Verizon from charging websites to reach users at faster speeds. That's just enough time for the FCC to vote to end the open internet protections by mid-December. The FCC is started soliciting comments from the public on PI's proposal to end network neutrality in May. More than 22 million comments came in, but there have been so many serious irregularities with the process that Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel thinks that the FCC needs to slam on the brakes. I've got concerns, says Rosenworcel, who also served on the FCC under President Obama and originally voted to instate the Open Internet Order in 2015. She says there are some procedural problems with the way this has all come together. For instance, she said there have been allegations that most of the comments came from bots and dead people. Most of those fraudulent comments were suspiciously against net neutrality, while data analysts found the overwhelming majority of organic comments were in favor of internet regulations. So, I know we go hard on Democrats a lot. I would like to point out that the FCC, if they end net neutrality, it's basically going to fuck up small businesses. It's going to fuck up civil rights activists. It's going to fuck up people who don't have money, power, and corporate backing. So it's fascinating to me in an era of, you know, MSNBC, Rachel Maddow, fucking Joy-Ann Reid, all those people who are very, very anti-GOP, anti-Russia, anti-bots, are being really silent about the fact that it's bots who are trying to sway public opinion on net neutrality rulings. But maybe that's because they all have corporate jobs and net neutrality doesn't really matter to them. Maybe. Possibly. That could be. In May, the FCC said its comment system went down due to deliberate attempts by external actors to bombard the FCC's comment system with high traffic. Rosenworcel also noted that the Government Accountability Office, now investigating that attack, raised red flags, including questions as to whether or not the attack actually happened, since according to letters from two Congress members who called for the investigation, the FCC hasn't released documentation that would allow for confirmation an attack occurred. And all of this is why Rosenworcel says, before a vote takes place, the FCC should hold a series of open hearings across the country to ensure Americans get a fair shot at weighing in on PI's proposal. But that's not going to happen, because they don't care. I think it's important for the agency to get out from behind its computers and actually meet people face-to-face, because the consequence of killing the open internet could be extreme. If you want to make changes this big that affect every person in this country who accesses the internet, we shouldn't be shy about reaching out to Americans and asking them what they think about these policies. Rushing it through a bureaucratic process at a speed so that when they occur before anyone knows what happens is just at odds with basic transparency. And then, of course, without network neutrality rules, internet providers stand to make a lot of money, since companies will be operate what is essentially a two-way toll, collecting money both from subscribers and websites that want to reach users at faster speeds. The internet companies that are able to afford the fast lane speeds would likely get to set the price, which could relegate more websites, including smaller startups and struggling news organizations, to slower internet. This would help further entrench the power of incumbent internet companies. Yet one of the great promises of the internet is that there's no telling what someone might create next, and if internet providers aren't required to treat all websites equally, that vibrant future would likely flicker out. So, basically what that means is that, because a lot of people still don't seem to get it, right? They're like, so what would I actually be losing if net neutrality happened? So this is what you would lose, is that if, like, you know, WineCellarMedia.com, we have news. This is where we have our, our podcasts up at. But we are independent. There's two of us. And we have some really nice friends who are like, hey, did you see this story? Or could you address this topic? Who give us ideas and help produce segments. But this is a two-person operation. And this is two people who have jobs. And one of the two of us is working 70-hour weeks right now. So we don't have the time and money to invest to promote to internet users, which means if they were to, like Comcast or AT&T said, hey, we're gonna you know, piece apart the internet. And if you want to buy a news media plan for an extra, you know, $22.95 a month or what the fuck ever the price is, here's the channels that you can have. Since most of the people who listen to us don't have a ton of money either, that means you will not be able to afford a package that would include WineCellarMedia.com being fast. It'll probably include like an MSNBC, maybe like a like Washington Post for their website, New York Times, right? SF Gate, Chicago Tribune, the major outlets like that. And I don't even know if all of them would be able to afford it, but you know, you might get put on that package. But when it comes to independent media, independent podcasters with their own websites, people will not be able to afford to use our content or to access our content. And then, of course, Comcast will come to us and say, hey, so if you want as many eyes on your content and the fast internet service the way that, you know, MSNBC has, we can do that for you if you pay us a fee. But because we're just two people working, we don't have money to give to Comcast for that kind of ad promotion space. And our shit's just going to go to the side. And it's not just us. It's, you know, independent, you know, like beauty bloggers. It's independent media. It's independent news. Here's the thing. If you turn on MSNBC right now, like, I guarantee you they're talking about Russia. And not about the concentration camps in Chechnya for gay people. You know, not about the decriminalizing domestic violence. Not about how corrupt Putin is and the Russian opinion of him. But they're going to be talking about the election and Trump and bots all day long. But who's talking about sex worker rights, right? Who's talking about oil spills, right? We just had a fucking, the Keystone oil spill just happened. There's what, like 200,000 gallons of oil on the ground? Corporate-owned media isn't going to cover that because the people who support the pipelines also own your news stations. So think about that in the long term. How will you be able to access media? Fair media, honest media, if the people who are paying for your media don't want you to hear something. And I know we all make fun of, like, you know, Fox News and, like, oh, they, you know, they lie and their listeners are so brainwashed. That's what's going to happen to pretty much everybody if this net neutrality shit happens. Because independent places won't be able to keep up. So, yeah, that will matter. It'll matter because we won't be able to afford to advertise as, you know, an independent company because we don't have the money. People who want independent content won't be able to afford the package that would include people like us. And independent media will fall by the wayside. And if it's not on, you know, an NBC, ABC, MSNBC, it's fucking gone. That's it. That's it. So, yeah. Yeah. It's not good. It's not good. So, support net neutrality, please. Please. I've been putting up links. I've been putting up videos, I've been putting up explanations, you know. And another thing, too, is if you think as far as social justice movements go, do you think they're really going to give priority speeds to, like, Black Lives Matter websites or feminist websites or pro-trans rights websites? We're going to be screwed if this shit goes through, so I guess, I don't know. Don't say I didn't warn you. I don't know. I feel like no one's listening, but that's what's going on there. So pay attention to the net neutrality.
Free thought conversation.
All right. Now, the last thing I wanted to mention was Cardi B. Yeah, I know. I know. Everybody's like in love with Cardi B and whatever. I'm not. We talked about Bodak Yellow. The song is craptacular. It's like Migos with a higher pitch voice, basically. But here's the thing. So people are on this whole, like, you know, I respect Cardi B's feminism, which is, first of all, weird to me because it gives, like, this implication that Cardi B has said a lot about feminism, and she hasn't. So, like, there's that, first of all. But the wildest thing to me is that her feminism is almost like an anti-intellectualism thing wrapped up in anti-respectability politics. And that's, I'm not really here for it, you know? I'm not here for it. So, I just want to clarify what I mean, because people are like, well, you don't have to be academic. No, you don't have to be academic to be a feminist. And Cardi B says that, and I agree with that. But her thing is like, well, you don't have to read books about it, because the only thing feminism means is that you want gender equality for people. And it's like, I get that, but oversimplifying it is not good either, because if you don't have to study and read books or listen to podcasts or look at blogs or take classes, then how do you understand how power structures work? Like, if you're not actually looking at it, you know, as anything besides it's just gender equality. So I'm a little bit skeptical about that with her, but Jezebel wrote this thing about her. Let's see. Cardi resists labels like feminist because she doesn't feel like it applies to her. You know what? I'm not even going to consider myself nothing, she says. Here's the thing, that bitch has got me fucked up when it comes to that word. People think being a feminist is a bitch that, like, went to school. They wear skirts all the way to their motherfucking ankles like a goddamn first lady. But that's not being a feminist. Being a feminist is being equal to what a man do. Niggas hustle and I hustle niggas. Jezebel is lauding that. By saying, being a feminist is being equal to do what a man do is the most succinct summation of what feminism means. Okay. I mean, so here's the problem. This is what Cardi B is doing, because she's like safe hood for feminists, right? They're like, oh, she's like the best feminist ever. It's not because she really says a lot of feminist things. It's because she's like wild and fun, and she's like, you know, like, ho is life. And I get that people like that. But what they're ignoring is that just gender equality doesn't take into other forms of oppression that have specifically targeted women. And what they want with Cardi B is essentially her, because she's removing the gatekeeper because she's not respectable, you know. Like, she's loud, she cusses, she drinks, she swears, you know, she was a stripper. Like, she doesn't do the respectability thing, which I appreciate, you know, I feel that. But then they're like, she's taking away the gatekeepers. And it's like, but here's the thing. She's not talking about taking down the gate. She's okay with the gate, right? Because she's still about the hustle. She's still about, I'm gonna hustle niggas. I'm still gonna get paid. I'm gonna make my money. So this is basically like the hood version of lean in feminism. Like, to be quite honest, of it's about feminism, but I still need to get paid because I still want to be rich and I still want to be the bourgeoisie. And it's like, if you are the bourgeoisie, though, if you're supporting a capitalist model, that means that by default, you're leaving women behind. And saying that a woman has the same right to make as much money as a man doesn't really do it for me, because this isn't about having the right to be as oppressive as a man. This is about trying to make society better as a whole thing to me. And that's a big part of what I think feminism should be. Because when you get to, basically, Cardi B is like a hood version of like an Ivanka Trump or a Hillary Clinton, who's like, I should have the same rights to own my own plantation. Never mind the fact that women are stuck cooking for you in your fucking plantation. Never mind the fact that women are going to be outside picking cotton in your plantation. You know, never mind the fact that just because of circumstances and different types of structural oppression, women are not going to be able to all own a plantation. Someone always has to work the plantation too. So if your feminism is about, I'm trying to get paid equally to a man, that's not feminism, because you're not actually advocating for equal rights. You're advocating for equal opportunity to be an oppressive asshole. And I'm really not here for Cardi with that. And it's not even like it's just Cardi. She's like the latest face of that, you know, because people somehow think that like it's progressive to make this a pseudo hood thing, you know, Like, I wouldn't say Cardi's, like, gangster. Like, I don't think Cardi is hard, you know? But she was poor, and she is from, I think she's from Brooklyn, you know, one of the boroughs in New York City. So for them, she's like, they're like, we made it. You know, I made it. This is the come up kind of story because she came up poor and now she's rich and she's famous, talking about, I want the same ability to come up the same way a man has a right to come up. But that's not gender equality. That's advocating for the right to be oppressive at the end of the day. Because at the end of the day, for every black woman who doesn't get to be Cardi, they're going to be working three jobs. They're going to be getting sexually harassed in the workplace. They're going to be, you know, working extra hours. They're going to be getting, you know, their fucking wages cut. They're never going to see that cost of living increase. They're going to be struggling. And they're going to be forgotten because of people like Cardi B. Because, you know, it's, again, you know, white feminism has become a thing where the goal is to be as horrible as white men. And then, you know, it was like the non-white feminism, but not necessarily black feminism, where they were like, we want to be like white women. And now black women... And black feminism in a lot of circles has become, we want to be like white women too. But remember, the original goal of white women was, we want to be like white men. So basically, it's a rush to get to the oppressor class. That's not feminism. That's not actual gender equality when you're leaving other women behind. Like, if you're leaving poor women behind, you didn't do shit that was revolutionary. You didn't do shit that is to brag about. You didn't do shit that is amazing. This is not like the only definition of feminism that we appreciate. Like, I'm just not here for this shit because I hate this classist ass consumeristic shit. So, you know, like I said, the thing with Cardi B is she's, because she was a stripper, because she talks the way she talks, she's not respectable. And people think that now that a non-respectable Negro has made it, that this is progress for black women, but it's not. Because all Cardi B did was take away the gatekeeper, but the gates are still up and we can't all fit through that little fucking ass gateway. And nobody cares. Because the only goal is, I want to have the same right to hustle the way a nigga does. Instead of asking why the fuck we gotta hustle in the first motherfucking place anyways. You know, so yeah, I'm not here for Cardi B. And I know, I already know, we made the whole thing about her song. I don't like her song. I don't like her bars. But, you know, people will be like, oh, you're just hating, you're just hating. I'm not hating. I'm tired of this rhetoric, you know, and I've spoken about it before. I spoke about it with the fucking lean in feminism, that white corporate feminist shit. I fucking talked about it with Ivanka. Ivanka's like, I'm a feminist. Like, no, you just want to be as horrible as the rest of the men in your family. You don't give a shit about women as a class of people, you know. And it's the same shit we talk about with, you know, the corporate feminism, the bougie feminism. And it's the same shit that we've gone in on with, you know, in black circles where there's black women who are bougie who are like, I'm a feminist. And it's like, you just really want to be a white woman. And that's what Cardi's doing. It's not okay because she came from poverty. It's not okay because she says bitch. It's not okay because she's not respectable. Like, the problem is at the end of the day, you're still leaving women behind. And if you are willing to leave women behind, why are you even calling yourself a feminist, though? Like, for real. Like, for real, though. Why are you calling yourself a feminist, though? When you're advocating for economic inequality. Like, why? Why even fucking bother? I don't know. I don't know. I don't have a reason. And so, I just wanted to mention that. Because that's, like, been on my fucking nerves for a minute now. Because I can't deal with this notion that the freedom to own your own plantation equates to gender equality. Like, I can't imagine that your end goal is, I want to be as oppressive as someone else. I want to be in the 1%. I want to be able to shit on people. Nah, man, I'm not here for it. That's not what I'm about. So, I mean, if you really think that Cardi B is a feminist because she acts like a man, but acts like a man in a very, hypersexual, in a very capitalistic and a very consumeristic way, you should maybe think about what feminism and gender roles really mean to you, right? And I strongly encourage people to, like, really think about that. Like, is that the end goal of this, you know, liberation or of this movement? Is I can act, I know we say, like, we want everybody to have equal rights, but there's a difference between everybody has equal rights versus I have the right to act equally to the oppressor class, which is white men. Yeah, I know. I know, I'm not fun. I'm a killjoy and everybody loves Cardi and I'm, you know, like, let's go deeper and let's talk about it. And I know people don't want to, but I think that that's important, because if the goal is to be equally allowed to oppress, you're not actually about genuine equality for people. So, you know, just maybe something to tuck in the back of your head. Be mad. Don't be mad. At me on Twitter. Email me. Get at me on Facebook. Hit me up on Reading the Shade and argue and complain. Like, that's fine. I don't mind. I mean, I stand by what I said. You know, the same way that Cardi B having a hustle like a nigga is not liberating to me any more than, you know, Hillary Clinton being around is liberating to me, any more than white men being in power is liberating to me, any more that black men who try to be white men is liberating to me. Like, no, it's not. So, you know, I said what I said. Fuck it. There it is. It's done. So that is that. I think I am done for now. Of course, you can always follow me on Twitter at @uppityNegress, 2 P's, 2 T's, 2 S's. I talk a lot of shit there. I think we might be recording another episode maybe tonight or tomorrow, hopefully. We'll see what happens. And of course, feel free to hit us up on patreon.com/winecellarmediafund for $5 a month. Or, of course, you can give us a one-time donation at paypal.me/phoenixandwilliam. Also, please check us out on Facebook. We have Reading in the Shade fun page. We also have Social Analysis Social Dissonance, a critical analysis of justice. That's a fun page to hang out on if you have time and trolls don't bother you. Like, if you just like to play with trolls because they've been coming out in droves lately. So, all right, those are all the places to find us. We will catch you later. Hopefully, William, we will be able to be on the next episode. And have a good night. Stay safe wherever you are. Live life well. Enjoy yourself. Do something that makes you feel good.